Good morning, Bodhisattvas. So wonderful to have this opportunity to be sitting on this retreat with all beings throughout space and time, taking the form of us right here. As we sit together and embody this practice. So this new piece in our liturgy book called Hope in the Dark, I noticed this particular piece right away on going through this book, and I really like this piece, and yet I encountered quite a strong resistance to it, and I wasn't sure whether I was actually going to be able to talk about this lovely piece. And I realized that the resistance was coming from another teaching that has been quite important to me over the years of my practice with Boundless Way. In fact, it was one of the first Zen books that I read upon coming to Boundless Way. And it was a book by Joko Beck called Everyday Zen. And I forget whether it was our Tenzo Ed Oberholzer who introduced me to this book or whether it was his college roommate, Ken Rivard. The two of them... We got together and experimented at the old Spring Hill under Ed's leadership with trying to conduct a little book reading group, and we would take a little bit of this book, Everyday Zen, and sit together and talk about it. And my memory of it is that we had some wonderful discussions. And I'm not sure why we didn't continue with that, but I thought it was quite a lovely introduction to some great Zen ideas. And so out of that book of Joko Beck's, perhaps the one teaching of hers that struck me particularly hard was her teaching of no hope. That we should give up our ideas and fantasies of how life needed to be before we would be able to fully participate. This pursuit of some better self, something that needed to be fixed, some true self that we could find in our Zen practice. And once we found this, that would then be the time to move forward in activity. And so Joko Beck was quite clear that we needed to give up these ideas, and that the point of Zen practice was just to meet exactly what's here and let go of these ideas and fantasies, which of course arise, right? There's always other things that we wish we were, parts of ourself that we regret, and reasons for why we're not actually doing the sort of thing we imagine that we should be doing. And Joko Beck tells this wonderful story of an old Japanese Tenzo that she met in some monastery, and he was out in the hot sun raking seaweed over stones in order to dry it and prepare it to be used in the meal. And he was rather elderly, and he was doing this by himself, and she went up to him and asked, you know, why he didn't get some of the younger monks to help him. And his response was, because others are not me. This is my work. This is the work that I do in order to care for all beings. Just preparing food for them with all of my care and love, and this is a whole and complete activity of taking care of beings. No need to imagine some alternative, greater work that we are unable to do, and that if only I was a different sort of person, I would be out saving the many beings in some other superior way. So this letting what's here be enough. Letting our attention and care and love brought to whatever it is that we do. It doesn't need to be preparing food for monks. It may be typing away on our computers, or doing math or science or office work. If we are bringing our care and attention and doing our best to feed, we might say, beings through our work in whatever form that might be, letting that be enough. So this whole no hope thing, quite an important concept to me, and a wonderful teaching. And here we have a different teaching that uses this same word, hope. And it seems to me that actually this is perhaps quite a Zen thing, where we have two different teachings that both use this same word hope in two very different ways. And both of these teachings, I think, are very true and important. And perhaps a little confusing to use the same word for both, but nonetheless. So this piece, Hope in the Dark. When we recognize uncertainty about the future, we realize we may be able to influence outcomes. Alone or in concert with a few dozen or several million others. Hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable, an alternative to certainty. It's the belief that what we do matters, even though how and when it may matter, who and what it may impact, are not things we can know beforehand. We may not, in fact, know them afterward either, but they matter all the same. So she says, hope is an embrace of the unknown and the unknowable, an alternative to certainty. So this, I think, is not the same sort of hope that Joko Beck was talking about. It's the belief that what we do matters. So, quite clear, right, that what we do does matter. And that it's important for us to find ways to express our wishes for the world. So, how do we do both of these things? I think it's quite important to start by giving up our ideas about how things need to be different. Starting by meeting just what's here. And watching what arises in the midst of just being present. So, allowing us and the universe to be exactly the way it is, including all the bits that we don't like and wish were different. Starting with that. What's here? But it's also important for us to examine who it is that we mean to be in the world. What are the things that we value? I think this is actually quite an important thing in Zen, is this setting of intentions and making vows. We do this quite a bit, actually. Our four bodhisattva vows, our 16 bodhisattva precepts. How do I want to be in the world? What is it that matters to me? Setting intentions of how I mean to behave, and making these vows. I think this setting of intention and making vows expresses this sort of hope in the dark of not knowing what impact our actions will have on the world, but recognizing that what we do matters very much, and there are many things in the world that we might wish to influence, perhaps to resist. So this wish for all beings to be happy and free and treated well. Fixing this firmly in mind. So, meeting what's here is the first part. My teacher, Josh Roshi, likes to use this sort of triangle that begins the first corner is down low and close to us, and this is being with what's here. And then up and out to the top of the triangle is setting our intention, making our vow, aiming for the stars, the third angle of the triangle is the falling short. Because, of course, our intentions, our vows, are things that we fail at over and over again. And then bringing that back into ourselves through this process of atonement. Bringing it all back to us, being at one with our mistakes, our failures, and renewing our vow again. So just being present to what is, making our vows, falling short over and over again, and atoning by being one with all causes and conditions. I think this hope in the dark plays an important role in this. Thank you. So please sit comfortably, and we'll have an opportunity to come together in Dharma dialogue.
I really appreciated the nuances that she pointed out in this, using this word hope in these two verses, and how that can play into our intention and our vow. I wonder, how do you see the concept or word faith in relationship there? Is it the same as hope, or is there a different shading?
Well, of course, faith is, you know, an important part of our practice. I'm not sure I would equate, you know, the hope that I'm talking about here with faith. For me, the faith is being able to be with this unknown, and it's not so much of a, you know, expressing my intention outward. It's more of a grounding for me, I think.
I'm curious about where the question comes from. What's your sense of the word faith?
I think that faith often is problematic for people, often because it has had burden of past religious experience or cultural burden, right? And yet it shows up as one of our three pillars that we recognize. And often I think hope is in the same family as faith, but doesn't carry the burden, so it's easier to be encouraged by.
Yeah.
And yet faith has a different sort of meaning somehow.
Well, I still keep going back to the new translation I found for the what are actually called the three essentials. And the translation of the original Chinese word for faith is more like confidence. So I think that's more like what you're both talking about. It's just like, right, you know, this is something. It's not necessarily a cognitive thing. So in that way, the word faith was the translation used in the 19th century. And I think it was a way, right, to bring in American transcendentalists into this whole thing, if you think about it.
Yeah.
So confidence, right?
Yeah.
And then doubt is more the translation is more like confusion or agitation.
Yeah.
It's not like a cognitive doubt. So they're both emotional, physical, as well as cognitive. All three essentials.
Yeah.
And so I think that's very important.
Yeah, I'm reminded too of Sharon Salzberg's definition, saying faith is trusting your own deepest experience.
Yeah.
And that's been helpful for me sometimes.
Right, that's like what Steve did with the word hope. You know?
I think so.
And that's what I also wanted to say. These are just words, right? And we fixate meaning to them, which I think was what your talk was about. Because I've had the same reaction to that piece, and you know, in my training through various places, including in the Bible, there's a translation of what God says to Job in the company comes from the whirlwind. In Stephen Mitchell's translation, he says, "Look," I love that. "Look, hope is a lie." That's the word of God, right? So what do you do with that? These are cons.
Yeah.
Language is inherently dualistic, so that means we have to do just the kind of investigation we're doing this morning.
Yeah, thank you.
Sort of picking up on faith, in a way. For me, it always had this element of a sangha. I mean, I come from the same sort of background where, you know, faith is one of those things you just don't want to deal with. But what hit me was this sort of, I like confidence. And I like it because where faith came in for me was sitting down and realizing that there were people I was sitting with, people in the Sangha, people I trusted, people I saw, and they gave me the faith to continue with a practice that is just, you know, kind of loony, in a way.
Kind of loony?
Very, very, very loony. And I trusted them, and I had confidence in them, and I had faith in them, and in a way, it goes back to Joko Beck and that Tenzo. This is my work here on the cushion.
Right.
Nobody can do it for me.
Right.
But, and I always love that about Zen. There's always this but on the other hand.
Or and.
Yes.
Because it's not in contradiction.
And I'm doing it with other people. And I'm doing it with people with whom I have confidence.
What's that line? You can't do it alone and no one can do it for you.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Revenge.
I really appreciate this text, particularly because of the link between hope and action. It's a real emphasis on action in the second reading, that we have to act even though we don't know what the outcome will be. And I get very stuck at that point in my life, trying to figure out where Zen actually helps me make decisions about action, taking action when I really don't know the consequences. It's also related to the, I think, one of the few things we say every time that I kind of don't understand, the part about my deeds are my closest companions. I am the beneficiary of my deeds. My deeds are the grounds on which I stand, which clearly is, I think, my reading of it is, it's making the deeds much more important and substantial in the world than what I think or feel or hope, which, you know, are internal experiences. And, you know, I often don't know whether my actions are going to be beneficial for anybody, let alone myself.
Yeah, so that's exactly the point that's being made in this piece, right, is that there's, it's unknowable, right, how our actions are going to influence the world, right? We decide, you know, what it is that we value and spend our life energy in heading off in that direction, and it's completely unknowable what the outcome will be, both before and after we act, and yet what we do matters, right? So we have to do something. And I think it's also, you know, there's that bit about throwing ourselves into the house of Buddha, and then all is done by Buddha, right? We have this idea that it's all up to me, you know, to determine the outcome here, right? And so it's very important, I think, to go through this process of meeting what's here and allowing the, you know, our intention to act to come up out of actually meeting, you know, reality first, right? Rather than our fantasies of how things should be. And that if we allow ourselves to clarify in this process of meeting reality through Zazen, which is the thing that we actually have faith in Zen, right? Is that if we rely on meeting reality by sitting still and paying attention, that our life energy will come up and that we'll somehow know, you know, how to spend it, right? And it's not up to me to know in advance what that is, right? It's in the process of sitting with it and the process of acting on it that it's realized. Right, and that's, you know, it comes up from the universe. Where does anything come up from? Right, we think oh, I got to come up with this stuff, you know, and it's really not like that, right? We sit quietly and watch the arising of, oh yes, so this is the thing I need to be doing, and we do that.
Well, I get stuck at that point sometimes. I really get stuck at how do I take action when I don't know
right.
the consequences, and they could actually be bad consequences,
right,
which I've certainly seen everybody
have
with intentions going awry.
Right. And they do go awry, right? And that's why we have to atone for our misdeeds. Right? We have to decide. So what's best, right? What do we think in this moment? And then we're constantly reevaluating, right? We say, okay, well, I'm really unsure. You know, I don't know what's the best thing to do, but it appears that, you know, maybe it's this, right? And so we head off in that direction, and then we say, oh, you know what? That actually isn't the right direction, right? I think it's over here, right? And so we head in that direction, and we do what seems to be best in this moment, realizing that we're not going to be correct even, you know, the majority of the times, but just doing nothing won't do either, will it?
Right. No, actually, it's helpful to have you frame it in terms of that it's not, I act as though it's my decision, my action,
right.
Whereas you're right. It's actually coming from the universe through me, and that doesn't necessarily mean it's, the outcome is more reliable, but it's not exactly as personal as I make it either.
Yeah. But I think that's kind of where the element of faith is too, right? That if I sit still and allow myself, you know, that there is actually this Buddha thing, you know, and that, you know, this is my best opportunity to clarify, you know, my thoughts, my intentions, my actions. You know, this is our faith, is that by sitting still and paying attention, stuff will arise, and that it's probably better stuff than would have come up, you know, without going through that process and relying just on me, right? I mean, that seems like hopeless, right? To just rely on my neuroses as being the basis of my activity, right? I mean, that isn't that the worst way to go? It seems like to me that's the, you know, to not examine, right, and just live out my fantasies and neuroses is the worst possible thing to do, isn't it?
Yes.
Maybe.
Thank you.
I was just going to say that I have found that the comfort I've developed through practice in not knowing outcomes and being comfortable not needing to know outcomes has been really helpful to groups that I work with. So I'm going to leading a political organizing meeting this afternoon. And one of the principles of political organizing is that you have to convince people that what they're doing matters and that it actually matters that they do it. So they actually have to do it. Otherwise, if they think everyone else could do it and take care of it, they'll just stay home and watch television. And so one of the goals as a political activist is to make sure you have some wins, because if you don't have some wins, people get discouraged and they leave, you know, it falls apart. But as a Zen practitioner, I'm not actually interested in the wins. And although I don't say that out loud, I think bringing that spirit into the organization, people pick up on it, and there is this way that we can feel completely whole in working together in alignment with our values, without saying a word of Zen. But so I think what we do here on the cushion, you know, really, really helps in the world of doing, and not doing is also a form of doing. So all for doing.
And the other perspective, I think, from practice, is the completeness of each moment. So on one hand, we often do things so that something else will happen. And so then we're sort of attached to, we want to make that happen. And I think what we're talking about here is a way that our action is an expression of our love. So that we act not just, we may or may not come out right. We just don't know. But if we can be as clear as we can, and then we make our wholehearted effort, we take a step, and that in each step, that's all we get. You don't get two steps. Right? There may be another one, but we do get one step, and in that step is the meaning of our life, and in that step is the fulfillment of our vow. And so all of these aspects, but that bodhisattva vow, and doing something, maybe coming to retreat and sitting here. But William James said that our action in the world is our vote for the kind of world we want to live in. So we act in that spirit, not just so that something else will happen, but as a fulfillment of our ancient vows.
And another, as we turn the crystal of this very complicated issue, another way of looking at it too. I'd like to invite us to see, first of all, how risky it is to do anything. Right? And so one of the things in Zen that we really promote is showing up. Really, really showing up in a way. You know, we don't, when we bow, we don't just do a perfunctory like whatever. You know, you put your hands together and you incline your torso a little bit. You really do it. Every cell of your body in it. And so this is the training we're doing, to take these risks in Dokusan, to come forward, not with the thing you've planned for the whole preceding periods of Zazen, but show up in the moment, like really as yourself. It's very risky because you don't know the outcome. And then the second thing I'd like to invite us into is just to hold a little bit lightly the idea of right and wrong and wins and loses. Because things are so complicated, we might think we've done something wrong or some terrible thing has happened, a great loss. And we don't really know. We deeply don't know. And this is what Rebecca Solnit talks about. This is her definition of hope. You know, that we really, it's, Steve has said it three or four times already this morning, it's impossible to know. It's impossible. So if we put things into those categories of gain and loss and right and wrong, then we limit things. And maybe the last thing I want to say in this little piece is, today is January 20th, 2018. And a year ago, January 20th, 2017, many of us had a huge shift in the way we relate to the world. That was the day that Donald Trump was inaugurated. And so the reaction and the response to that today is there were protests on the 21st last year, and the 20th, same thing. You know, the people are not just sitting back and going, whatever. Diane's going to this organizing meeting this afternoon. Fran left yesterday to go to the Women's March in Hartford. You know, everybody pulling the weight. We don't know what history will look back. I hope there's human history to look back on today. But it's required that we do the work that Diane was talking about here on the cushion in order to go out and do what we need to do in the world. This is not not a practice for just sitting around and, you know, looking at our navels. It's sitting around and looking everywhere. And it is personal, as well as not at all personal. Mm-hmm. So maybe with that, we'll end our discussion.